Creekside with Don and Jan. Welcome to Creekside with Don and Jan. If you care to live in harmony with nature and the land, and you wish to live more peacefully with all your fellow man, if self-reliant living is a big part of your plan, if you like to talk some politics with those who really can, this is the time, this is the place, Creekside with Don and Jan. Sit right down and make some space, Creekside with Don and Jan. Let's get started right away, Creekside with Don and Jan. No more singing, no delay, Creekside with Don and Jan. Creekside with Don and Jan.
Well, howdy and welcome to another episode of Creekside with Don and Jan. Hi, I'm Don Stover.
And I'm Jan Stover, and this is episode 344. And we're fast closing in on our 350th episode.
What are we going to do for that?
Oh, I've got that all planned.
Oh, you do?
I do. I'll tell you later.
Was I included in the planning?
You can come.
And will we have cake?
Oh, sure. Why not?
Can I have beer?
I don't think that you would celebrate without it.
Okay.
How's that?
You got a beer with you now?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Sparkling water all around. That's
well,
what we've got here.
I'm having sparkling water and blood orange.
I know you are.
I have that.
The flavoring.
I have the power.
Uh-huh. So, we have a very special guest, and we are anxious to jump right into that conversation. But first, Don, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little about who he is?
Well, just for a second here, ask yourself, do you know anybody who's ever floated or rode in a kayak for 2,500 miles?
No, I do now.
Okay, we are an elite group of people who know, if you think about it that way. We have a gentleman who took his kayak from Yellowstone to the Mississippi River and the Gateway Arch, 2,500 some mile journey, just under 2,500 miles. And
a three-month journey,
a
three-month
journey,
said.
Yeah.
And what is his name, Don?
His name is Mark Fingerhut, and we welcome him to the program. Thank
welcome
you, Mark.
Welcome to the show, Mark.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, we're excited. We had a friend that I knew in high school contact us, the Caldwells, Doug Caldwell, and he said he's a follower of the podcast. He's a follower of the Owl Creek Gazette, and he said, I think this journey that Mark Fingerhut is on is perfect for your listeners. And so we got in touch, and we've kind of been in touch ever
Lo
since.
And behold, he was right.
Yeah, exactly. We've done journeys before, and we're always fascinated by somebody who has a passion and follows it. And so I would say this is a passionate journey you took. And just give our listeners an idea of what inspired you to even consider such a trip.
I'd say probably within the last 10 years of my life, I spent more time on the water in general. I got a kayak, and I've accumulated about six more since my first one. My wife loves that.
Kind of like Don and guitars. Once
yeah.
you get them, you just keep getting them.
Or amateur radio, and that's the other
right.
hobby.
Yeah. But there's a race that happens every summer, a paddle race across the state of Missouri from Kansas City to St. Charles. And so I've competed in that four times and kind of just fell in love with being on the big rivers, the Missouri, the Mississippi, certainly tons of the rivers in southern Missouri, and your average float trip rivers down there. But it's just a different experience being on the Missouri River. With that race, you're paddling all day, and a lot of times you're paddling through the night as well. So you're seeing the river at you know, as it exists 24 hours a day. And so I just kind of got into, well, what's the next thing I can do on the Missouri River? And got turned on to a very active community on Facebook, the Missouri River Paddlers, and learned about these people who take these journeys. Every year there's probably about four or five people who end up doing the whole river, a little bit fewer this year. But that was kind of my main motivation. I just started learning more about being on the river, all the different things that you'll see along the river from Montana all the way down to St. Louis, and just really started researching it and diving into it. And then my wife and I took our honeymoon in 2017, in the fall of 2017, and we drove through a bunch of national parks out west, and we made our way through Yellowstone, and right near where the Missouri River starts, we stopped into Three Forks, Montana. The three rivers come together to form the Missouri, and at that point, I stood at the confluence and I said, you know, this is something I'm going to do someday. I'm going to bring a boat up here, drop it in the water, and I'm going to paddle to St. Louis. And the stars kind of aligned to make that trip this summer. And, you know, I had to ask work for the time off, and luckily they were flexible enough to let me do that. And
what an employer.
Yeah, and not to mention my wife letting me take the trip.
Oh, yeah.
What a wife.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's kind of the long story made short there.
Well, when you decided to do this, and I'm sure, like you said, it's been in the back of your mind for some time, but how do you prepare for something like this? Physically, financially, just the actual mindset to know that you're going to be out on the water for 3 months?
Yeah, I think where it started for me was a book called The Complete Paddler by a guy named Dave Miller. He paddled the entire river over the course of 3 summers back in the early 2000s, and he wrote a very detailed guidebook, mile by mile. Here's what you're going to see. Here's where you can stop. Here are the stories that, you know, that he experienced going along the river, and it included a lot of historical aspects of the trip as well. So that was probably the number one place where I just really started diving in to get an idea of what the trip would be like, what you need to prepare, what you need to bring, how long you can expect the trip to take, and it just very detailed in helping me plan for the trip. And then from there, I talked to a lot of the experts through that Facebook group I mentioned, talked to a lot of people who had done the river before. There's a guy named Norm Miller who actually paddled up the river from St. Louis to Montana.
Big arms, huh?
Yeah, yeah. I can't even imagine the challenge of doing that in reverse, but he was extremely helpful in helping me plan everything out. Physically, I didn't do a ton. I worked on my paddling muscles here and there. I took a three-day trip on the Merrimack River. I paddled from Steelville pretty much back to St. Louis, and just to get the feel for setting up camp each night, sleeping in the tent, breaking camp in the morning, and then paddling all day. That gave me, I think, at least a good mindset of what I was about to do. I did that back in the spring of this year, so... So, yeah, it's just a lot of preparation, coming up with my gear list, getting a boat lined up and everything like that. So it was quite a bit of effort to plan everything.
Is there significant barge traffic on the Missouri past a certain point?
Not a lot. A lot of the upper river has dams, and it's not navigable to big boats.
It's not like the big river.
Yeah, so I saw a few barges pretty much starting from Omaha on down to St. Louis. I would say maybe 7 or 8 at the most, but they tend to be a lot smaller barges than you see on the Mississippi, and so there's never really an issue of having to like avoid them or to pull over and let them pass or anything like that.
Well, I have no reference point for that, so I'm The Missouri River's the river of Lewis and Clark, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So,
and we've been doing a whole thing on Lewis and Clark in the Owl Creek Gazette. So it even we say how many things come together and are symbiotic in ways that we don't anticipate or serendipitous. Mm-hmm. And so you doing this and us connecting with you when we've been featuring Lewis and Clark in the magazine, and I say feature, it's kind of. I don't think they need featured, but you know.
Hey, Meriwether, how are you today?
Just looking at that history. So you saw a lot of that history, like you said, when you were doing your own journey. And I bet from time to time you looked and thought, boy, whose feet have trod this or whose boat have canoed or paddled on this in the same trip?
Yeah, absolutely. The historical aspect of the trip was a huge part of my preparation as well. I love history. I love reading about history. I read Undaunted Courage leading up to this trip, the Stephen Ambrose story of Lewis and Clark.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the journals of Lewis and Clark along with me on the trip. And so that was something I would do. I didn't do it religiously every night, but a few nights I would, find the portion of their journey in their journals where I was at that given time or what I was about to see in the next few days and just read what they had gone through. And I felt like that connection was... it gives you an opportunity to sort of time travel. You know, it was something that happened over 200 years ago, but what you're seeing hasn't changed all that much in that time. Certain parts of the river, it has changed quite a bit, but There are a lot of natural sections of the river that are protected. They're untouched, and you're seeing it just as Lewis and Clark did, you know, when they first traveled through.
Boy, that leaves you in awe of that whole thing, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Do you have, or have you identified what your favorite spot is, or is there a mostest favorite spot that you've got?
It's hard to say a single one, but one of them certainly up there was a spot that I camped at, and in the guidebook I was using, it said that a nearby hill was climbed by Meriwether Lewis, and when he climbed to the top of the hill, that is the very first point at which he saw snow-capped mountains of the Rockies.
Oh, wow.
I woke up, you know, pretty early that morning before sunrise. I think I woke up around 5:15, 5:30. And I climbed the hill that was, you know, it may not be exact. It's kind of theorized which hill it was, but I climbed to the top of that as the sun was coming up and kind of looked out. And I didn't see the Rocky Mountains. It was a hazy day. And I think they had said some of the wildfires in Canada actually had some of the haze in the sky. So, but just, you know, standing where he might have stood and looking out towards where the Rocky Mountains are, and it was just a amazing experience to kind of just stand there and be there for that.
Well, it is something to inspire awe, no doubt about that.
Well, take us on like a day, a general day, and I know that it will vary because where you are and what you're doing, but I imagine there were some days that were pretty much like other days. And what did you expect? You got up early and headed out, or how did you proceed?
Yeah, so there's a big difference between whether I was on a lake and the water didn't have any current, or whether the river was actually flowing, because that really determined my course of the day. But in general, what I'd, you know, what I do is I'd be camping, and then I'd wake up when the sun comes up. A lot of times that was 5:30, 5:45, 6 a.m., and pack up the boat. I'm not a huge breakfast person, so I'd snack a little bit in the morning, and I always made coffee the night before, so I had that with me in the morning. I didn't have to spend time brewing coffee to get me going in the morning, but hit the water around 8, paddle most of the day, stop a few times throughout the day just to stretch my legs and stretch my arms. And luckily I didn't have any, you know, terribly hot weather until I got closer to St. Louis, so I was able to kind of deal with the heat. And then sometimes I'd stop a little while for lunch, you know, grab a bite, grab a snack from the kayak, and then paddle on. And then about anywhere from 4 o'clock on, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, I'd start looking for a campsite for the evening. And if I found a good spot, I'd pull over and set up camp and then cook dinner. I made a lot of dehydrated meals. My wife got a dehydrator last winter, and so I spent a lot of the winter just experimenting, trying all kinds of different things to dehydrate and mix together to make meals, and it turned out pretty well for the trip.
Well, there's, you know, some companies out there too, like Mountain Home or Shelf Reliance, that all have some pretty tasty things. And the worst thing I believe you can do is use an MRE, because of the sodium and those are built for completely different purposes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I made a lot of jerky, and that was my go-to. I would eat throughout the day just to, you know, get my energy up and get a lot of protein from the jerky. And it was so much cheaper to make my own jerky than to buy it. So.
And then, of course, you've got to do some provisioning. Whenever you had the opportunity, you would go in and you know, visit a town wherever you were near.
Yeah, generally that was the case. If there was a town or a marina, I would certainly make a point to go there to kind of switch it up. I'd certainly rather have a hot meal than a dehydrated meal. And my wife actually shipped me resupplies along the way. So she'd send me a box with more meals, and she'd include some treats there, some Snicker bars or some cookies. Or a friend put a bottle of whiskey in one of the packages, so that was a welcome addition as well.
So what did you start off with when you headed out that very first day? You've got your kayak, you've got yourself. What are the supplies that came with you?
My camping gear, so a tent, sleeping bag, and generally I tried to get stuff that packed down very small, so to save space in the kayak. I did not pack enough cold weather gear because the first 2 weeks in Montana, I started at about 8,000 feet of elevation near Yellowstone Park, and it was pretty darn cold the first 2 weeks.
That's something us landlubbers forget about is the elevation.
Yeah, and I figured, you know, mid-May, oh, it's going to be warm enough.
Or us flatlanders.
Surprise.
Yeah. Yep. Got to Montana, and there's snow up in the mountains, and so that was a challenge to deal with, but I made it through. Rain gear as well. It did rain quite a bit early on in the trip, and then just kind of other stuff. I brought, I was fairly connected technology wise. I had a GPS tracker that I was able to use to see where I'm at any given point and send and receive text messages to anyone, even if I was out of cell phone service. That was a nice thing to have, and then a camera, things that allow me to kind of update my blog and stay connected throughout the trip. That was a big part of it. And then I did have to accommodate for water supplies. There were certain stretches of the trip where last winter things had gotten so cold and so icy along the river that some of the ice flows had taken out a lot of the campgrounds and water supplies that were at those campgrounds.
Wow.
And so I would have to pack 5-6 days worth of water at a time. I wouldn't be able to stop every day and refill my water. So that added a lot of weight to the boat.
We're not talking 2-liter bottles here. You need some significant water sources, right?
Yeah.
Because a guy's supposed to have, a gallon and a half or a minimum a day?
I think they say 2 gallons. If the weather's warm, they recommend 2 gallons a day. I don't think I ever quite drank that much, but, I was certainly trying to stay hydrated as possible while still conserving.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
I also know that, for instance, when people are taking the Pacific Coast Trail or any of those hikes and long journeys, they sometimes meet people along the way and become buddies from only that experience and travel together some. Did you do that as well?
Certainly. There's river angels up and down the river, and these are a community of people who they wait for the paddlers, they look for the paddlers, they look forward to helping support the paddlers as they come down the river. So I met people all the way from Montana all the way down to St. Louis, basically, and some of the best river angels I had, a lady named Peggy at Tobacco Gardens Resort in North Dakota, runs an amazing resort, and I showed up there, and she's like, well, here's your cabin. You're going to stay there as long as you want, and here's my store and my beer cooler. You just go in there and grab whatever you need, as much as you want, and it's rib night, so I'm going to make you a full rack of ribs, and then when you leave, I'm going to give you another rack and a half for tomorrow and a steak you can cook in the afternoon when you get hungry. And I was just blown away. That was probably my most memorable river angel experience. But just running into people as soon as you mentioned that you're paddling the whole river, a lot of times it goes over people's head and they're just like, oh, okay, sure, whatever, buddy. And
but, yeah, right.
But for the, yeah, exactly. But for the people who do recognize, how special it is, their eyes light up and they want to hear stories, and they'll buy you a beer, they'll buy you a meal, and they'll go out of their way to help you out because they know you're on such a long and hard journey. So,
well, that's incredible.
What did you take away from the experience as far as nature? We talked a little bit about, standing in the same places that Lewis and Clark did, but was there something scenic along the river that you had not anticipated? Or maybe something you had anticipated and were thrilled to see?
Yeah, I think one of the other big things I wanted to get out of the trip was understanding what are the key issues, the key challenges, the key things that people run into who live along the river and who use the river in their daily lives. And so, each state kind of seemed to have its own set of challenges. In Montana, tourism, fishing and hunting are huge. But then also as you get to eastern Montana, there's every mile there are tons of pumps just pulling water out of the river to irrigate the fields. And so I got a chance to talk to a few people about, how do the water levels affect what you're growing and your crop performance and things like that. And And then what was pretty crazy is as soon as I crossed the border from Montana to North Dakota, the very first thing I saw was a huge oil rig. And they, you know, they're doing a lot of fracking in North Dakota. And I went to bed in my tent one night talking to my wife on the phone, and I looked around and I said, I can see about 10 fracking fires or flames from where I'm sitting right now in my tent. And then another night, you know, as it got dark, the sky was just bright orange from the fires. And
oh,
so,
wow.
The gas flares, yeah.
Yeah, the gas flares. And so I also got a chance to talk to Peggy. She is constantly butting heads with the oil industry running her resort because they're, you know, they're mining the fields around where her resort is. And, you know, they want access and she doesn't want to provide and various things like that. So there were a lot. It was a lot of that. And then certainly this year on the river was a high water year. There was flooding. There was tons of damage as I got down into Nebraska and Iowa, Kansas and Missouri. You're running into campgrounds that are totally wiped out. I passed places where there's RVs just tossed and turned, and the water rose so fast that people didn't even have a chance to get their RVs and their campers out of the way. So, you know, I think that's something I want to explore further is, you know, what are these things that are, you know, affecting life along the river? What are things that the average person can do to educate themselves about how, you know, how we can pay attention to the river, how we can give it the space it needs, how we can help clean it up when things like this happen, when the floods, you know, bring down all kinds of garbage and stuff. So, you know, that I was trying to be a sponge and absorb as much as I possibly could during the journey as well.
Well, we'd mentioned off air that you might possibly write a book about your journey, or at least it's percolating around in your head, and who could blame you at this point? Because not only is it, like you said, the experience itself, but the people and how they're affected, that's a story in and of itself.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the thing. If I were to sit down and write about my journey, I don't want it to be, well, today I paddled from here to here, and I ate this for lunch, and then I saw this. I want to go a little bit deeper. I want to explore some of those issues and, you know, do a bit more research and talk to more people and, you know, make the journey come alive with the things and the issues that are actually out there on the river rather than just a black and white guidebook or, you know, just a very simple here on the surface was my journey from start to finish. So,
well, I know Lewis and Clark did part of their purpose was to write down all the new plant life and new animals they had seen that they might not have ever encountered anywhere else. So did you see any animals along your journey that surprised you?
Starting on the Madison River, which is a world-class award-winning fly fishing river, so it's very natural, very protected, and I saw a few moose early on. That was pretty cool. I came around a corner, and one's just sitting there on the shore, just staring right at me.
He's probably thinking the same thing about you.
Yeah, what are you doing here?
I live here, buddy.
Right.
What brand kayak is that?
Yeah, tons of deer, lots of antelope, bird life. If I was a bird person, if I knew what I was looking at when I saw birds, I'm sure I would have been drooling, but tons of birds. One night, as I was setting up my tent, a beaver kept swimming by and aggressively slapping his tail on the river right next to my tent. I guess trying to
this is my space.
make himself known to me. Yeah, I did see a buffalo on one of the big lakes. Tons of bald eagles, lots of snakes, and. No close encounters. I did see a bear up in Montana as well. It was way up on a hillside, you know, very safe from there. They did tell me to pack bear spray for the trip, so I had that with me the whole time.
Mm-hmm. They pretty much keep their eyes on you, too.
Yeah.
Because they don't want the confrontation.
Right, right.
And so is there a place that you would never go to again?
The answer to that's probably no. I you know, everywhere I went along the river had different aspects to it, different challenges, different scenery. So There's no place I wouldn't do again.
Okay.
People ask me that, oh, are you going to do the river again? I was like, no, I'm not. I'm never going to do the whole river again. That's silly. Why would I even consider it? But there's a stretch of river in Montana called the Missouri River Breaks National Scenic Riverway, and that's it's one of the most paddled sections of the river, but it's one of the most beautiful. There's white cliffs, there's lots of valleys, there's badlands on both sides of the river, and it's just an amazing place. And so when I, you know, if I do get the chance again, I would love to bring friends or family back to that portion of it and kind of share that part of the river with them.
Any really fast water anywhere?
Not really. The fastest water I encountered was basically from Omaha to Kansas City, or to Kansas City on down to St. Louis, because the river was so high. Mm-hmm. And you know, with they keep the river channelized in that section so that the barges can move through. So the river is moving pretty quick in that area. And if I was, you know, if I was paddling at a decent clip, not even really really hard paddling, I was probably going close to 10 miles an hour.
Okay.
And so that was easy to knock out a lot of miles that way.
Yeah, there's no rapids like you'd see on the current river or none of that.
Not really.
Okay.
Up on the Madison River, there were sections of even upwards of class 4 and 5 rapids, but me being in a wooden kayak, I chose to bypass those sections.
Sure.
Got a ride. Portage around some of those parts of the river.
Yeah.
Well, did you ever feel afraid? Did you ever feel you were in harm's way for any reason, or was it less threatening than that?
I think the only times where I was nervous about my safety and, you know, kind of where I was at, a couple days there were pretty big waves up on some of the lakes higher up on the Missouri. It can be a 4 or 5 mile wide lake in the reservoir, and when the winds get going, it kicks up the waves very quickly. And so some of the days there were upwards of 4 or 5 foot waves, and if they were that high, I would not paddle. I'd take the day off, and I did have a few days off because of the waves and the wind. But some of the days, you know, there were, you know, pretty big waves, but not dangerous enough that I felt uncomfortable. So I'd be out there paddling and sometimes get a wave splash over the top of my boat. And it was a little bit nerve-wracking sometimes to have some of those big waves come at you. But, you know, generally I was comfortable as long as I knew where the waves were coming from. And then one of the nights, I have to knock on wood and count my blessings that the weather was so good throughout the trip. There's only one night where I had just this awful thunderstorm, and I was lucky enough to, partially place my tent under a low-hanging tree, a branch that provided some shelter. And for about an hour and a half one night, it was just nonstop thunder and lightning and wind and rain, and I was just trying to hold on to my tent to keep it from blowing away. And not get struck by lightning, and then keep poke my eye out of the tent to make sure that my boat tied to a tree was still there and not getting blown away. So that was very nerve-wracking, and I made it through. I was shooting my wife updates as the storm was going through, letting her know that I was still alive. So.
Well, that is it's incredible what you did, and I just like to say congratulations, because it's something that few people only dream of.
Thank you.
And I'm not one of those. I mean, I'm not an oarsman or not a paddler by any stretch.
No, but we can certainly appreciate that journey.
No kidding.
So now that you've come back home and you're off the water and you've had some time to kind of, you know, assess and think about everything, where does this trip leave you? Wanting more, or? And you're smiling, so.
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's what a lot of people have asked me. And to me, this was, you know, I've been a boring office worker pretty much for my career. 13 years I've worked at a software company in St. Louis, and this was certainly a change of pace, but I don't think it's going to change my outlook on life or my, you know, my career or my path. I think, you know, I do enjoy working in the technology industry, so it's something I'm looking forward to going back to, but going back to with sort of a changed outlook. With this experience under my belt, I think it's something that I'll draw on in in a lot of aspects in my life, including, you know, my professional background as well. It's, you know, it was a big enough challenge that facing a challenge in my career or professional life, I don't think will seem as big or as, you know, dire as what it would seem once I do go back into the professional world. I think in the future, certainly I have other adventures in mind. I don't think anything as significant time-wise as this. I am going to get a chance to do that MR340 paddle race in a couple weeks. So while I'm in pretty good paddle shape, I'm going to take advantage and do the race that's happening here in 2 weeks.
Well, that's cool. And, you know, whenever you take something like this, it's a daily life thing. You've got challenges on the river. You've got they follow a certain pattern, and even software problems follow those similar patterns. Mm-hmm. You know how to stack things up to solve.
Right.
And that's how I repair things, too. I mean, you know, I spent a life repairing electronics. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's used everywhere.
Right.
Right. It's one of those things that if you can look at something and not be scared by a situation and know you can solve it, or at least calm yourself enough to say, what do I need to do to make this better or find the solution, and you can do it, then you have that much more confidence in your life in general, I would say.
Yep.
So one thing before we close, I want to ask you, what was it like at night when the weather was great and you could look up and see the stars? Was there just that moment of, like we talked about, the awe when you saw the mountains? Was it that same kind of quiet, personal introspection?
Yeah, I'd say so. My favorite time of day was after I had my tent set up. I had eaten my dinner. I just sat in my foldable camp chair that I brought and just sat there, watched the river, watched the sun going down, watched some of the fish jumping in the water in front of me. Usually enjoy a little sip of whiskey before I went to bed, but that, I think, was my most, you know, precious time of just kind of recognizing nature, recognizing the journey I was on, and being thankful for the ability to do it and the ability to see those amazing places out there.
Well, I tell you what, we hope you'll come back to be on the podcast. And I'm also going to ask you right here, would you like to write for the Owl Creek Gazette? Portions of that book before it makes its way into final print maybe can appear in our magazine, because I think it's a great story and I'd love to share it, wouldn't you, Don, with
you
our readers?
In a heartbeat.
That'd be great. I would look forward to that. I appreciate it.
Well, we can maybe begin by pulling some of the things from your blog. And before we go, let people know where they can find you. We've mentioned it before.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
PaddleSt.Louis.com. PaddleSt.Louis.com. I've been trying to keep that updated throughout my trip, kind of leading up to as well. So a lot of the preparation that went into my trip. And then I still want to kind of keep it updated in terms of, you know, getting back into regular life, what I'm running into, some of the things I'm doing, you know, how I'm recapping my trip. And then if I do decide to take this journey with the book as well, you know, certainly kind of keep that as a conduit to people who can follow along there. One more thing to mention, I'd be remiss not to mention it, but I kind of did the trip to help raise money for Missouri River Relief. They're a great organization. They do a lot of the river cleanups around St. Louis, and they also do a lot of educational programs with kids, educating them about the river. So, that's another place to check out, Missouri River Relief, Facebook or on their website. And, you know, as a way for the average person to connect to the river, just going out and doing a day of cleanup along the river gets you out on the river, see some amazing things, meet some amazing people. So, just want to plug that as well.
Oh, that's absolutely so very cool.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. This has been a fun journey. We've taken 30 minutes, 3 months and 30 minutes.
That's
not
right.
Everybody can do that. That's why we want more on the pages of the Owl Creek Gazette.
And before we go, we also need to say that we need you to contact KNR Wireless if you live in the greater Effingham area, including Altamont, Effingham, Dietrich, Hartville, Teutopolis, Siegel, Shumway, and Lilyville. They do internet. They do it good. Info at knrwireless.net. 217-347-5967.
And they are the official sponsors of Creekside with Don and Jan.
Indeed. One more thing, we'd like to take the time to invite you to like us on Facebook at Creekside with Don and Jan and our publication page, Owl Creek Gazette, and keep up with future happenings and interviews and plans. Mark, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Today or tonight.
I appreciate
whatever
it.
Whatever we are. It's been a long day for me, too.
And like we said, we'll be sure and stay in touch.
All right.
Okay,
thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye now.